Welcome to the Speaking Podcast. You can find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. We're also on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find the links in the podcast description. I'm also a podcasting coach, and I've got four other podcasts, The Meditation, Learn Polish, The Crypto, and The Awakening, which is exposing fraud and corruption, but with solutions. You'll find everything on bio.link/podcaster. My guest today in the UK, he's a speaker, he's a performance coach, but he's also a podcaster, which I love. So please welcome Paul Teasdale.
Thanks for having me, Roy. Appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. And like for those that are used to listening, just to let you know, this is actually on Spotify as well. You see the video. And prior to recording, I was actually complimenting his background because it's very professional. And like you mentioned that you're standing, which a few of my guests have said so. So I suppose you might just talk about the background and the reason for standing, because I think it's important.
Yeah, I mean, the background started off because I'm in a small environment here. I'm in a small part of the house. I work from home and it's quite echoey. And so I wanted some acoustic dampening and looked up some acoustic tiles just on Amazon. First thing that comes up are those sort of square standard ones. And then I noticed these hexagon ones that just look a little different, really. So it just helps with the bounce and the noise when I'm doing recordings for my own podcast and being guest on podcasts as well. And also just it makes life a bit easier. I used to have a picture frame in the background, and it was great, but it didn't look too professional either. So it's just like, how do you keep things clean but practical? I think maybe 30-40 pounds to spend on that, which is I'm a frugal guy at heart as well. So how do I get the best bang for my buck?
And like just to show people that are watching, that's the ones that I got to do it. So like yours are 100 times better. They look beautiful. It looks like it. Because another problem with a frame as well is with that, if you're kind of sitting or whatever, it still looks good. Whereas with a frame, if you've moved up or down, it doesn't look right unless you have it exactly centered.
Yeah, precisely. And in terms of the standing up, I bought myself a standing desk a while back, partly from just wary that I was just sitting down all the time, you know, and you can't do that all the time when you're working. It's good to have that opportunity to do that. But when it comes to speaking, to podcasting, I just find my energy lifts. I find myself able to stand up, to breathe easier, and to project myself a bit better. So it works for me. Not everybody has to do it, but it's a really good technique if people are trying to build their energy up. I noticed the difference almost immediately when I started standing to record.
Brilliant, brilliant. So I know I didn't do it at the start. I mentioned just the kind of bullet points, but you might introduce yourself a bit more to the listeners.
Thanks, Roy. So Paul Teasdale, I am a performance coach, facilitator, workshop designer, all sorts of different things that fall under helping people perform. And that's what I do and what I've done over my career, which has spanned everything from sausage making to banking to Formula One. And that's where I do most of my speaking events and most of my work now, is taking lessons from that world of Formula One and helping people to distill those lessons and apply them for themselves for their own high performance. And so I work with organizations, giving those inspirational talks, talking about the practical steps you can take to bring high performance to your organization, and some of those parallels from the world of F1, which tend to be entertaining as well as bringing in some real practical things that you can do that help move you towards higher performance.
Excellent. And just going back a few levels then, like you're speaking, whether it was younger or was it when you were in the sausage factory that you started speaking to people, what's your speaking journey?
So my speaking journey, I was thinking about this, probably goes back to when I was young, maybe 7 or 8, I was always in the school plays. I was acting. I've got a really vague memory, vague memory, is that the right term? A really strong memory anyway, of standing playing Scrooge in my Christmas Carol, Christmas play for school, with my older sister sitting in the front row and basically trying to heckle me and put me off at the same time. So trying to get over that those and deliver in those early stages. And throughout the years, I've always been okay with speaking. I've never had a real strong fear of it, but it's something that you do get nervous about and you do sort of struggle with at times, particularly when the audiences start getting bigger and bigger. But I've really sort of put myself into it, really. It's like, this is, if this is the way I'm going to help people and bring value to people, then I've got to be able to put my whole self into it and learn and do this as best as I can.
Excellent. So one of the things that I see today, and I've seen in some of the videos when I was doing the research, is your top, which are actually, you know, the name and the kind of logo. And yeah, I think it's good in a way because you're actually promoting yourself. Like, have you found advantages to actually having that?
Yeah, I mean, for any listeners, I've just got a couple of black polo shirts with the Paul, what's on this side, Paul Teasdale, helping people perform, little logo, just, you know, very easily sort of came up with that. I'm trying to remember, I think it was for when I was developing a website originally, and the website helped me with some logo, standard logo options. And so I just took that, put it on some, and branded some polo shirts. And I find, one, it helps me get into that space of, you know, now I'm at work, even it's not a suit and tie, but it's my suit of armor, should we say. And also it makes things really easy. I've got some standard material. I've got two of these shirts. I think I'm going to have to invest in a couple more, but, you know, one's in the wash, one's ready to go, you know, all that sort of thing. So it just helps me to have some consistency. And I think when you're podcasting, when you're speaking, when you've got yourself as the brand, having a consistent look and feel can really help with that as well.
Yeah, no, and I mean, on the other side of it, because like I do a load of podcasts, and especially with the Polish one, and I'm wondering, did I have that shirt? I mean, I have about 40 or 50 shirts, but sometimes you might, because it goes in the watch, and you tend to wear your favorite ones. And then I'm trying to think, and it's something I don't want to be doing, like thinking, did I have that? So people think you're wearing the same shirt all the time, whereas that's got to help. And when, like, I don't know, do you go to, like, say, networking events and stuff like that? Because what I found is, for my marketing, I used to always get like a pin related to the company, and people will come up. So you're making it easy for people to come up. So I presume it's the same when you've got that on your t-shirt, huh?
Very much, because people forget your name. They, you know, you can tell them that your name in conversation, and we'll be talking. You go, oh, what is it again? And you can just look down, surreptitious little look down at the logo. Nobody minds you're looking at the logo and just oh right, it's Paul, and that really helps those conversations as well. And I think going back to what you said as well, the likes of Zuckerberg would do this. You know, it's like, it's the easy option. You don't have to make a decision. And seeing as a lot of my talks are about decision making, then how do you simplify those decisions? Well, you know, have some standardization in there.
Excellent. So, just before we delve into like the coaching and all the different things, because I've seen the video and it's fascinating, the different graphs and stuff that you're doing. But like, because I love podcasting, I see, I think it's 38, it might be more now, but when I was looking at it, it was some like 38 episodes that you've released. But Kajabi, is that one that you're kind of self-publishing? Because I haven't seen Kajabi.
Yeah, Kajabi is the platform that I put all my podcasts on, and that then feeds out the RSS feeds all out to Spotify and Apple and Google and all the rest of it. I chose that a while back predominantly for an online course that I was developing, and it was that as a platform for developing and hosting that online course. And then as I went into and decided to go into podcasting, I noticed that Kajabi had a podcast element to it, and it might have been slightly more per month, but it, you know, it was all in one place. And it was you know, I've already paid for a certain amount of things for hosting the course, so I may as well have it all in one place. And it's been a great one for me. Very simple and easy to use. So, yeah.
And like, it sounds to me, because I've heard of Kabaji for doing courses, so that means you're in control. It's you own it, but they have like the software with the RSS feed, so you can just share that everywhere else. Which, and why I think it's important is, one of my friends who I do a lot of collaboration with, you know, exposing fraud and everything, right, Spotify removed them, and they didn't. He was trying to get the RSS to transfer to a different, and they just ignored him. Wow. And he had 70 odd episodes. So it makes sense, especially if you're doing something a bit controversial, that you're in full control of it.
Yeah, no, it is. It's an interesting one. And actually, the other day, one of the things I did, maybe it's related here as well, is I backed up everything, make sure that I've got an external drive with all of that content. It came through a good friend of mine, another podcaster, a guy called Jens Heitland, was talking about the fact that as a podcast and the materials that you've developed as a podcast, it's the biggest asset that you can develop. You know, you've got, not only have you got the podcast episodes themselves and the content there, but you can particularly with all the AI that's coming out and all of the software that's there, the ability to cut and paste and snip and have, develop it, the transcriptions into a book, all sorts of different things that you can do with that content. So, you know, if you are developing that content, don't lose sight of the fact that it's a huge asset that you can have for your own marketing, for your own development, for your own product in future.
No, absolutely. And I think that's one of the main things for a podcast, because a lot of the times there's people, they're not making money, but they don't realize, especially like what you're doing, you're reaching potential clients. So when they're listening to what you're talking about, they go, oh, I like what Paul's saying. And then it can lead to gigs or, you know, even just one-on-one coaching.
Yeah, definitely. And I've got two parts to the podcast as well. The main podcast, and this is how it started, was me interviewing others. On the theme of helping people perform. So I talk to coaches and facilitators and financial advisors, all sorts of weird and wonderful angles on that topic, which helps build a network. And that's a great way of getting yourself out, because every person that you have on, if they share it, they share it out to their network, it spreads the word. But if you're trying to sell yourself in some ways, then actually this is something I've done more recently. It's having smaller episodes where I'm just speaking to camera and I'm bringing my learnings and snippets of those learnings on a week-on-week basis. And that gets the audience knowing you and trusting you a lot more, because they need to know you, trust you, believe in you before they can buy from you, if that's what you want to do. And, you know, it's building that trust, and it's a great way of putting yourself out there.
Yeah, and I've seen, I think you actually, for them episodes, you put a hashtag as opposed to the other one, so people can identify the different ones. Yeah. But I don't know if you noticed, but I remember when I went from one podcast a week to two, the more you do, it's not that it can double, it can actually triple. You're looking at it going, wow, this is incredible, like, but it's obviously a lot more effort and more marketing and everything, but I think it pays back.
It's been a huge learning experience. It's helped me with my own speaking journey as well. So looking back on previous episodes, how did I come across? How can I speak better? How can I get the messages across in a more succinct way?
Brilliant. So I suppose let's delve into the Formula One, and because just take it in the direction that you want, because I know you cover a lot of different things. You've got graphs up that are very impressive.
No, I mean, I've just take the lessons from that world of Formula One. I spent 6 years working with the McLaren team. My job was to actually go out to external clients and working with the likes of KPMG and Deloitte, who we had big partnerships with. They would bring in these big clients. We would talk to them, go in as a sort of partnership, and say, right, what are your challenges? What are your opportunities? And how can the ways of working, the methodologies, and some of the technologies that McLaren have developed over the years, how can we use that to improve your performance? And so my role was essentially like a consultancy role. I would head up from the McLaren side. What's the opportunities, helping you to identify and articulate those opportunities, those results you're trying to drive, and then bring in the right level of expertise. Because we had it was an interesting model where you didn't have so many, it's a small, relatively small team there, and you can't call on people all the time because they're doing all their day jobs and lots of people doing other great work. But you might have an opportunity to bring in some data scientists, some modeling, simulation people, predictive analytics, all sorts of weird and wonderful stuff that you could bring in, but you had to make sure you were bringing the right people in at the right time. And that was my role there. And since going independent, I've just distilled those learnings down into what's the stuff that really matters. What are the things that, when you look at how a Formula One team is operating, what can people learn from that in all sorts of different environments? And I've applied this to everything from supermarket shelf stacking, oil and gas drilling, banking world, finance and insurance opportunities, also airport operations, all sorts of different ways in which you can take these lessons and bring them and inspire people to think differently. They might be about data-driven decision-making, high-performance culture, all sorts of different things. And it's like forces me as a speaker to make sure that I bring out the essence of what drives that performance and what gets people the results that they're trying to get, and articulate it in a way that both inspires and is applicable and reachable for people as well. You know, it's achievable for people to apply those lessons for themselves once they know what they are.
And like, because like with Formula One, when they're tracking everything, it's like a split second is important. So by, like, I found out with just the podcasting, like, it's something I've done from day one. I track the metrics of everything, like, you know, like the downloads when I put it out, the whole lot, and where different places. So I know straight away, oh, this one is down a bit. And I go, oh, I didn't put it on Facebook, or I didn't do this, I didn't do that. And it's like what gets measured gets done, because a lot of times people, they just kind of just chug on. And I think when you're measuring everything, whether you have a checklist or something like whatever system that you're using, you tend to do more and get more focused. And when you see the results, you know what to vamp up and what to get rid of.
Yeah. Yeah. It's true. If you can't measure it, you can't manage it. And that's one of the sort of real edicts of working in the improvement space in general. And I think one of the interesting insights and one of the talks that is quite popular for people is I talk about how data-driven decisions in particular and data-driven performance should put data last. Because that, if you think about the world of F1, yes, there's huge amounts of data, but actually every bit of data that comes off that car has to have a sensor and some form of telemetry to get that data out to help make a decision. And a sensor is weight, and weight has a negative impact on your car's performance. So you've got to have that return on investment view as to what's the value of that data. And actually, instead of starting with, here's all the data I can look at, this sort of what I call a rapid performance approach, which is results, actions, people, insights, and data. You know, start with the results that you're trying to drive. You know, if it's about your podcast, you want results in terms of listeners, you want people to listen to certain percentages of your episodes and things like that. You want to maybe have different demographics that you want to drive as well. And maybe you want to think about how you get those results as well from a, you know, do you want to do that in a way that generates your and expands your network of potential buyers, or maybe it's collaborators, or maybe it's just interesting people that you want to talk to. So setting up exactly what success means in terms of those results is critical. Then you can think about the actions that you can take that get you there. So how do I set up my podcast? Who do I market it to? Who do I get on as guests? All of those things are actions and levers that you can push and pull. The P element is for people. So who are the people involved in making those decisions? So generally, if you're a solopreneur, you're a podcaster, you're the only person directly there, but also you think about your audience. You think about the people who might be involved in producing some of this, if you've got some production help. All those people are making decisions that impact those actions that have an impact on the results. And then you get to the I for insights. So what insights do those people need to make the best decisions? And insights for me are where you've got data and information that's presented to people in a way that helps them to make a decision. So it's not just data, it's not information, it's not just a report. It's actually something that's insightful that moves you towards a decision that you're trying to drive. And then finally, if you know what those insights are, you can actually work out what's the smallest data set I need in order to generate those insights. So you can actually come work backwards towards what is the data that I need to collect in order to make sure that I'm successful and get the results I'm trying to drive. And that's applicable in any walk of life, any organization. And it also, one of the advantages I've seen in clients is that it brings control back to who controls what data people generate. Quite often in organizations or in the world in general, it's like data just gets pushed at you. Here's all the data. Well, I don't want all the data. I want insights. So if I understand the insights, I can say, right, this is the data I need. I'm going to take control over what data I want you as a provider of data, whoever that might be. Might be the department if you're in a bigger organization or corporation, or it might just be some suppliers or looking at the likes of Apple Podcasts. You know, it's like, what data do I need from them? They've got so much, but I don't need all of it. I don't want all of it. So it's a, think about that minimal data set, and it sort of frees you up a lot and frees up the headspace along with it.
And just on that, actually, because when you're with the Kajabi, because it's interesting for me, because with Spotify, Now they've kind of given additional analytics. They actually show me how many followers or subscribers on the thing, which before you didn't. And I know that through Apple that but I haven't gone into it for ages, but I know that you can go and get a load of analytics. Do you actually get all the analytics for Spotify as well, or do they not give you that?
It does come in. It gives you sort of external views. It doesn't split it out in terms of Spotify or iTunes, I don't believe. But it sort of gives you an indication as to other areas that things have been downloaded, etc. So it does pull everything into one place at a high level, but doesn't give you the granularity. But again, how much, if you think about, do I need that granularity? Is it helping me to move forward and be better, or is there a risk at times of getting too caught up in that granularity and it actually doesn't help me move forward? It just gets me down a little rabbit hole. So
And that seems to be a major problem with a lot of companies. They know they start, just even micromanaging or just trying to pick on everything. And at the end of the day, they're not really benefiting. If anything, they're harming the company.
definitely.
So
Okay.
I know that you had one video on it. It was very interesting. You were talking about the personal shield.
Yes,
So you might touch on that because I thought it was very interesting.
So this is something that I came across. I used to live in New Zealand, work for a big dairy company out there, and then switched into banking because that's a natural progression, obviously. But I had a great guy who I work with out there who was a coach of mine as well, still a great great friend, and I call upon him every now and again. And he introduced me to this thing called the personal shield, which is a way of articulating the things that are important to you. And it's, if you think about a sort of knight shield, it's a shape of that with four quadrants. And you've got your values, you've got your sorry, your background. So articulating what your background is, your values, your passions, and your future. And when you first start using this as a coaching tool, you get people, give them a time bound exercise, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. And importantly, you get them to draw in each of those areas. No writing, you just got to draw little sketches and diagrams, and it does not matter how good or bad you are. It's all like, little stick men and as long as it means something to you. Because what you want to do is capture those thoughts in a way that is evocative to people and sort of articulates what it is they're interested in. And so in the background section, you're talking about where have you come from? What's your history? What's the common themes in your background? In the values, it's what's important to you. In terms of both your work and all of this is work and home sort of combined into one. Your passions are obviously the things that you're really passionate about and you like to do. And your future is where do you want to be? What's your goal that you're setting in front of you? And you can set that time frame however you want, whatever works for you. And then you follow it up with a coaching conversation. You say, right, tell me about that. Tell me about your background. So I've got things in my background, that call on the fact that I've lived all over the world. I've lived in various places, and I've had a lot of experiences. But also, one of the common things in my background and my journey from a career perspective is about almost being a translator, being a role where I take what people are struggling with or the opportunities that they see, and I've translated that into requirements or something that I can go to a supplier, often a sort of technical team. I speak enough geek to know what's what without being far too geeky to actually know what I'm talking about to actually deliver. But it's like I've had roles where it's like, here's the problem. We're struggling to do this. And so, right on page six, the landing page here or there, that thing isn't working. We need to translate that section into something that is easier to use, a bigger, brighter, whatever it might be. And so that is then translating that into requirements that somebody can just go, right, I'll code that, I'll get that done, I'll provide that report or solution. And so that's a lot about my history, my values, integrity, family, time. I'm a big very passionate about my values on time. I like to be on time. I hate being late for things. And passions. This is an interesting one when it comes to the coaching, because you can say like my passions are, socializing. I like beer, like rugby. I like to cook, and when it comes to in my passions in work, so it's like passions at home as well as work. My passions in work are helping others to have those aha moments and bringing my tool set to others. And then future, where do you want to be from a family perspective, retirement, financial health, your future in terms of where you see your role and career going, all those things. And one of the interesting conversations that always stuck with me when I talked through this shield with my coach was when you're looking at the passions. It's like, you know, you say you're really passionate about cooking. Do you want to do that for a living? Is that going to help you with your future? Is that where you see yourself in the future? I was like, and it gets you to think about it. You go, actually, for me, no. Cooking for me is my release. I like to be in the kitchen, in control of just my world. I don't want to be doing that for a job. I don't want to feel as if I'm having to work, because it isn't work for me. It's a relaxing piece. So it helps you to actually go, right, do I want to do that, incorporate that part of my passion into my my work or not? And when it comes to career development in particular, and career choices and moves, you can start to look at this personal shield in its totality and say, what are my areas of compromise? If I'm going, you know, is this moving me towards the future that I want? Is that organization aligned with my values? Does it give me opportunities to develop my passions? Does it bring stuff from my background? And if not, are you okay with that? And it's a great way of having those conversations, and even from a personal tool, just a thought provoker.
Excellent, excellent. Yeah. And like with the coaching, because I always find that with various backgrounds, I mean, you've had a wild field of, you know, sausage banking, Formula One. It's fantastic, because then you can connect better. Plus, you'll trigger different things that you've done, whereas a lot of people, their career path is the exact same the whole way.
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with that. And, you know, there are times in my career, wouldn't it be great if I'd have just stuck with that and moved it through? But, you know, it is what it is. And I haven't got any regrets in terms of what I've done. But, you can always get different perspectives from outside. And it's actually one of the bits when it comes to speaking that I love to do. It's connecting those bits. I talk about, you know, two titles, and I like to talk about when you're having an engaging speaking event, how do you get some titles that are just that little bit intriguing for people? So one linked to the Formula One, which is if you want to change tires, bring in the ballerinas, and the second one is how sausages change banking. And so having those sort of things where you've taken your learnings and your journey, and you can actually go, right, well, here's a story, but actually, how do I make that story intriguing for people so that they'll hear the story? Because it's all well and good having a great story. If nobody listens to it, it's not going anywhere. So you've got to entice people in and give them a reason to listen to your story as well. So happy to elaborate on those two, or just leave it hanging there.
No. It's fascinating. And with the coaching, because I see on your website, you've got very reasonably priced courses, like some $20 upwards. Mm. And I presume, like, having a low, because very few people would have something at 20 quid, but I presume it's a case of get them in the door, like you, and move to the next level. So you might touch on that, but also on, I see, like, you do like a 30 minute kind of, see if we're kind of a fit.
Yeah.
Do you have a kind of, because my fear with that is like, tire kickers, and if you're doing 20 of them a week, it's a lot of time wasted, you know. Yeah. Have you got a kind of conversion point that you got? Yeah, I need to convert, you know, every three or every second one.
No, so I'll cover the course first. So the course is about that rapid performance framework. So I've put it out there. It's out there as on my podcast. I talk about it. You know, I those shorter episodes that I do to camera myself talk about the overall framework, and they tend to be sort of 10, 15 minute talks as well. So talk about the overall framework, but I then break down in various sessions, each one of those areas, and actually, so the results, the actions, the people, insights and data. So it's out there. You know, it's not as if I'm saying, right, you've got to pay 500 quid for this exclusive material and you'll never get out elsewhere, but there has to be some value add with it as well. So that's the course that I've got, the original sort of Kajabi platform decision. And the value add is all the materials and the supporting bits, and the fact that you can dip in and run through that course at any at your own pace and go back and forth at any time, have the materials that support you putting into practice, that sort of thing. And I've got three price points. And this is something I'm constantly sort of experimenting with. You know, I've got the if you just want the material, you want to have a go at this yourself, crack on. It's 20 quid. You know, it's in the big scheme of things, it's a pittance really. And I've, you know, I want to make sure that it's already out there, but it does have value add along with it as well. And then if you want to pay a bit more, you can get some follow-up coaching sessions with me. And there are two levels of doing that as well. And I will then help you through your thinking, give you some more insights and work specifically on the challenges that you're doing as well. So that's the thinking behind some of the price points and the different offerings from on the course perspective. When it comes to the free online chat, so this is something that I came across from one of my guests actually on the podcast, who's big into podcasting himself. I think he's done 1300 episodes or so in the US, highly successful, does one episode a day, you know, has multiple podcasts that he runs as well on the side and helps people with podcasting. And one of the things he said is he'll always open himself up for a free 30-minute chat. I asked the same question, you know, is that how much of your time is spent with that? He said, you'd be surprised how little. So you put yourself out, you think your phone's going to call, you know, you're going to be ringing every couple of seconds, and you do get people following up and it's great, but it's that real sort of initial coaching chemistry sort of piece as well. It gives you the opportunity to go, I'm not trying to sell you anything. And in those calls as well, I don't try and sell people anything. I just try to say, what value can I add? What else do you want to know? How can I be of help to you? Even if that's connecting you with somebody else. And through that, and that's a genuine, that's one of my passions and it's one of my values as well. So it goes back to that personal shield. And so if it's not right, it doesn't move forward. But that low pressure environment also means that the people who do come along on that journey with you are genuinely bought into what you do and can see and feel the value that you can drive as well.
Yeah, excellent. And with the Kajabi, like, do you do that all yourself? Because I was looking at a lot of them with my own coaching. And I went with, I think it's later LMF, but I needed the web guy, but he's a friend of mine. So it's kind of not as bad as, you know, as somebody that didn't have somebody that can, but it ain't easy. And, you know, then I had to go in and buy another team to actually use a plugin for it. And I was kind of very disappointed because, you know, when I was looking at it, it was saying, okay, you can have email marketing, you can do this. And it wasn't as, and there's so many out there. Is it something that you're able to navigate yourself, or is it complex?
It's not complex, and it's one of the reasons. I think Carter I tried in the first place when looking at the course in particular, and I found that required a lot of technical, almost coding of your web pages and the setup for your course, and I wasn't interested in that. You know, it's one of those where I could sit down and learn, but is it something that's going to be of value to me? Kajabi was a bit more expensive, but it was literally a drag and drop. And, you know, from building the course, it was really easy, really easy. And then I found with the podcasting, it's, you know, once you've set everything up, which is easy in itself, add the episode, put in your show notes and schedule it to release. And then it gets pushed out. And so it's very easy on that front. I probably don't use all of the functionality around the email inside, and I'm not, from a marketing perspective, I possibly don't do enough, but I also, it's one of those things I don't like to push too much out to people too often, but I do want to, so I'm testing out a lot of messages in small pockets, and so that I can actually go, right, if this is the stuff that's of value, how do I get more of that out to people? And from my understanding, I've got some friends who use Kajabi a bit more professionally, might not be the word, but use a lot more of its functionality, and the emailing and the marketing and the automation there is, you know, from what I've seen, is pretty decent. So,
oh, excellent. And because when I was looking at a few of them, some of them you can kind of put up five different courses, and others you do one and then you have to pay again to do the next one. What way does Kajabi work? Is it that, like, if you want to put up another course, is that included in your package or must you upgrade?
I don't know if it's one or two. I'm on the lower level because I've got one course, but I've also got, it's being able to package it up. So those three different packages, for instance, those three products, are all have the course as their base, and then it's the follow-up coaching sessions that go along with it. And so I can do as many of those products as I like off the course. At the moment, I've only got the one course. If you've got multiple, you do have to upgrade, I believe. But you know, if you get into that level, it's one of those where ultimately it's a business expense that tends to be worth it. If it's working for you, it's paying for yourself very easily. So
excellent. And just kind of finally, like, I know you do a lot of workshops, so I don't know, have you, with the craziness for the last few years, did you have to do workshops online? And you might just talk about if you did that, but also how you kind of structure your workshops.
Do a lot of workshops online, and probably over the last, certainly over the last couple of years, and in my time working with McLaren towards the end of my career there, after the whole COVID piece, it was all online. Everything was online, and I also deliver other materials for other people. I do associate work, delivering their training materials, delivering workshops, and helping facilitate events. And so the online piece has a lot of advantages. You can bring in so many different people. It's cheap, it's easy to access, but it has its own rules and limitations, should we say, in terms of, you've got to encourage people to engage in a different way. People have to realize there are different mechanisms there, and you can use some of the technologies that are out there to support that as well. Whiteboards, murals, all those sorts of wonderful pieces. And in terms of my own work, in person is always a different level. It's just so much more intimate in terms of you can see and feel the mood of the group. You can see where questions are coming from. You can pick up a lot easier in terms of where the challenges are and where the dynamic of the group is shifting. Can be done online, but not as easy. And my workshops tend to be, it depends what the focus of the workshop is, but it's either about sort of ideation off the back of something. So, here's some inspiration. What ideas, how could we apply this? What's the opportunities that are there for us? And I'm a simple man. I go with should and will. And I was talking to my son about this on the weekend when he wanted to bake a cake, and he came out with the little Kiwi baking book of all these different options and cakes that he could bake. And he was born out in New Zealand, so he, any connection back to New Zealand, he loves that. So right, here's all the stuff we could do. You've got to look at this list and come up with a list of what you think you should do. What are the things that you think you should, those cakes and biscuits and things that you think we should make at some stage? And then finally, we're going to down select those in terms of what we will do. And by the way, we're going to end up with one of those. And so it was interesting going through that process just with him and trying to build that decision-making process in his mind. Is you've got a book, here's all the things we could do. Well, actually, that's too much. You're never going to be able to do that. And some of these won't be applicable. You might have allergies, you might not like certain things. So he's going to come up with, I think we came up with a list of about six or seven. It's like, right, now we're going to take those six or seven of the things that you think we should do, and we're going to think about what will we do. And so what are the criteria? I think we had criteria such as yumminess. is a chocolate cake yummy, and how does a chocolate cake compare to a raspberry macaroon cake in terms of yumminess? Messiness was another one. How much of a mess are we going to make? Because my wife and my daughter are out, and just like, if we don't clear up by the time they get in, we're in trouble, mate. So it's that, all those interesting same ways I run a workshop. It's those, like, how do you start with a big funnel, get lots of ideas on the table, and then help people to down select from that? And that can be the same when you bring those lessons from F1. It's like, here's something that I've learned, here's a model, here's an approach, some of the learnings that I've taken. What could that mean in your world? Right, of all those things that could be applied, what are the things we think should be applied? And then of all the things, you've got a prioritization process in there. And then of all of those things that we think we should do, what will we do? Because you're not going to do everything. And which ones are we going to do first, and in what order, and all that sort of stuff.
I love that. That's brilliant. And the story with your son, but I mean, reality is everyone can kind of relate to it and go, yeah. Ooh, that's a great way of actually. Fantastic. And just finally, with the social media, because yeah, it's a. I always love to ask people what they find their go-to and what I presume you're like the rest of us, we're bamboozled and it sucks the energy out of us, but we have to do it. Yeah. And which ones you find serve you best?
So I keep things relatively simple. I go with LinkedIn and Instagram. So I find those two are the best fit for me. Maybe Twitter occasionally, but I've got a Twitter handle. I don't use it that much, but I haven't found it that good for me or good of a fit. And so I just use that. And I love the fact that LinkedIn has now got a scheduling tool. So quite often I'll spend a day or a couple of hours and say, right, for next week, these are all my standard bits of content that I'm going to push out through LinkedIn. And it might, you know, it's just those sort of inspirational pieces, or here's a key learning and this is some thoughts, and you can sit down, you can literally spend half an hour just going, right, here's those posts ready to go,
and you so they can go out each day if you want.
Yeah
I wasn't aware of that. Brilliant. Excellent.
And it's the same with the sort of push for the podcast episodes as well, so you know, you can schedule those posts that say, here's a little teaser clip, and here's the, you know, find out more about the podcast here, and then schedule that to go out at the same time that your podcast gets released. So,
yeah. Excellent. Well, Paul, some brilliant tips today. So you might let people know how they can get in contact with you.
Yeah. Oh, so I mean, LinkedIn is probably the one of the key ones. So it's, I think I'm under Paul James Teasdale. It is the sort of LinkedIn / Paul James Teasdale. And Instagram, I think I'm the same, Paul James Teasdale on Instagram as well. Or you can just go to my website, that's probably the easiest, which is paulteasdale.co.uk. And there, one of the first things, that there's a little pop-up around that booking that 30-minute call. There's a couple of buttons on there as well. And I just encourage people, please do, you know, reach out to me, set up something, and more than happy to chat. If I can't fit you in, then, you know, we'll talk, we'll find a time that I can, and we'll talk about your challenges. I'll try to add some value and take it from there.
Okay, excellent. Yeah, and I make sure I'll put all the links both in the audio and the video. Thank you very much, Paul.
Thank you, Roy. Appreciate it.
No problem. So that's all for the Speaking Podcast. You'll find all our episodes on speakingpodcast.com. As mentioned, we're on BitChute and YouTube. You'll find my other four podcasts along with the coaching buyer.link/podcaster. Sure to give us a thumbs up, 5-star rating, and go into Paul's podcast, give him a 5-star rating and a review as well. It really helps. Until next week, take care.